Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
It reminds me of that old commercial, the freaking guy used to work and be in the grocery store, setting up the frozen dinners, and people would just constantly be like, I can't possibly eat this entire box of lasagna by myself. We're like, I'll be at your house Friday, 3 p.m. And he's just like inviting himself to everyone's house because they're buying stuff they can't possibly finish themselves. I don't know. I'm guessing none of us even heard of that commercial. It was like a long time.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that.
It sounds plausible. I'm not denying its existence.
If I can remember, I'll remember the brand before I know it. It was a Hormel or something like that, but it was like, I'll remember.
Man, enough to feed a family.
Or one hungry man.
Yeah, but
fill a man with meat.
Big meaty man.
Slapping me.
I like that you're all just going with this and just riffing off it. I appreciate the organicness.
Joe, I hope you're recording and not doing that bullshit where you think you shouldn't start the show at 10.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. We heard the big meaty men slapping me, and they're all here, plus Brooke. Meaty men. We've got Pernell, Tim, and Chris.
Meaty men and meaty ma'am.
Chris is celebrating a birthday.
Happy birthday, buddy.
Chris.
Thank you. It is one of those. Never thought it would happen.
I raised my
drink. You finally did it, man. You really did it this time.
I really did it this time.
You
reached a period of birth.
I'm not only raising a drink to you, I am raising a special limited edition drink to you.
Ooh, what is that limited edition?
It is a Mountain Dew Baja Deep Dive, which was a contest prize that they gave away if you drank enough of their other Baja sodas through the rest of the year and rotted your brain away. They rewarded you with a six pack of unreleased soda, and it's delicious.
That's incredible.
I don't know what to think of that. Joe has that soda. He was like, I'm already on my second can in the same day. I'm like, they only gave you six.
Number four, buddy. This is number four.
You got to ration that shit. You got to take like a can and cut it in half.
Yeah.
Like, you never know when you'll be able to take another deep dive again. I've
put plastic wrap over the side.
we will split the deep dive in two. Now you both shall have some. Take a sip. I think that's just my mentality. I'm always feeling like if I got a limited of something, I got to conserve it because I never know when I'll get it again.
I'm pretty bad about hoarding stuff and like not just letting myself have it. And then it's like 2 years later, it's like, well, now it's not special anymore. I try it when my friends are trying it or whatever. I need to just unwrap shit.
Yeah, right. I hear you there. I still have the jug of Mountain Dew from like 2016, which is now not drinkable. But by that same token,
I wouldn't drink that stuff now.
But it's available. Apparently, you can sell it on the internet, which I've considered doing. But something that I can consume, I'm still eating Reese cups that I bought last Christmas because they were the peanut brittle ones that you couldn't eat beyond Christmas, and they are the best Reese cups in existence.
Oh my God, I love Reese's and I love peanut brittle, and I've never heard of this. This is blowing my mind. I'm looking this up right now.
They're freaking tasty. And I'm guessing they'll come back around this holiday too. If they don't, God, they're fucking up.
I'm going to get my hands on some of these. Something I bought that I wouldn't open for like 2 years. I found a bunch of those Travis Scott Reese's Puffs. You know what I'm talking about? Ooh. It's just Reese's Puffs, but it just had Travis Scott on the front. And I like bought a bunch of boxes. I saw them at the dollar store. And then I was like on my phone pulling it up on eBay being like, I could sell these for like $16 a box. And then I just kept them for like years.
Something about that is like if the cereal itself is indifferent. Yeah, because the cereal itself is the same. You can just eat the cereal and keep the box. And just if you feel like you want to have a full box, you can just take a fresh box, take the bag out, replace it, and then seal it with some glue.
What's Boom. Funny is the last box I opened in eight, I didn't really want to say goodbye, but I didn't want to like neurotically keep the box either. So I cut out the parts that I like, and now I have this like Travis Scott little like inspiration board. I'll take a pic for you guys.
Yes, please do take a picture and share it with us. Because now that we're discussing that on the show, we can show it as the episode image.
Okay, I'll get you a pic.
It also is like a missed opportunity on the company's part because they could have made a Travis Scott face mask that you could cut out of the back of a box and wear.
Oh my God, that would have been cool. Every time there's a Travis Scott thing, I go buy it. I went to go get the Travis Scott McDonald's meal in 2020. And then I was like, y'all didn't add a side of nugs. Do you guys know anything about him? Like, is this a Travis Scott approved meal?
This is a travesty.
I got to ask my manager about this one. A travesty.
I'm like,
God damn it, Chris.
Chris is so good with the fucking puns. I can, like, now that he says that, I'm remembering that, like, Romancelvania finally got back to Joe and was like, dude, why didn't we think of Kisselvania? And I just started screaming. If you guys can tell by how I immediately retweeted that, I was just like yelling. Carrie lives here. I was like, Carrie, Romancelvania responded. And he's like, to what? And I'm like, that's fair. That's like weeks ago. This is like a tiny thing.
Yeah,
but to anyone listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, Romancelvania is coming out or something like that. And Chris was like, more like Kisselvania. And it was really good.
Kisselvania is a really solid name.
So good.
And now it's haunting the company. It's like, all this time we had a name right under our nose and we fucked up with this one.
Oh, man. And I hope they don't feel bad. But if that was me, I would feel so bad. I would be like kicking myself if I had to read Kisselvania and be like, wow, I didn't get there. Just cry myself to sleep.
They're going to buy the IP off of Chris for Kisselvania.
Yeah, if you need somebody to professionally name something, then I'm available. Hit me up.
He may be your guy.
Well, he named this show, so that works.
It's true, and that was paid work.
What all did you win from that, by the way?
Oh Lord, it's all like scattered across so many boxes now.
You want a Lord?
I know for a fact that I have a lenticular Final Fantasy IX mouse pad. That doesn't work with laser mice, but it's
that's
still
awesome.
Pretty cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And yeah, just lots of kind of random like pre-order swag stuff. That's I can't remember a lot of the specifics. Once I've gathered it all
I don't
all
remember
up again.
Any of them either. That was from so long ago.
I came in second place in that contest.
Ooh, what was your suggest?
I don't remember.
No.
I remember one of them was very pandering to Earthbound because I knew that would rank.
Tim, was your Scandinavian Mastodon lingerie?
No, I believe that was the third place one. I had something. I had two. I know I had two suggestions, and one of them was something like Starman something.
Couple Manticore leggings.
And I do remember I got like a hat that I actually did wear for quite a while. I don't remember what the branding was on said hat.
Oh, was it the super mega baseball hat? Or no, that had to be later on in the show.
No, it was like a you know, something I could wear in at least fall or the colder part of spring. I don't remember. Don't remember.
Let's just have another contest.
Yeah. Cool. One day we'll do one of the. It's been a while since I've had a big fucking giveaway. I should look into seeing if I could organize something.
Episode 1000 is right around the corner.
Close enough.
Be here before we know it.
Yeah, it will. But speaking of things being here before we know it, the Call of Duty beta just happened. And Tim, did you get to play some of it?
Boy, it would be a really bad conversation if I didn't. I meant to do that today, but it turned out they turned it off yesterday. Oh, man. I played some of it over the weekend.
Call of Duty.
Oh, you want me to go into more of it? Is it now?
I don't know. I don't know what Purnell's doing. So he's just singing scanning. To himself. So, First game to talk about tonight is Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 beta, developed by Infinity Ward, published by Activision. It's releasing October 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $69.99. Welcome to the new era of Call of Duty. Tim, what is going on in the Modern Warfare 2 beta?
Well, let's
I'm guessing shooting.
Yeah, they do have that. Nothing to make me has made me feel like more of a fucking old man recently than dropping into a Call of Duty deathmatch. Because that is not something. I mean, I was in on the review of Cold War, but like Cole did the heavy lifting on that a couple years ago. But otherwise, my history of playing Call of Duty games ended with Modern Warfare 3, and the history of playing the multiplayer in them ended with Modern Warfare 2. And yet here we are again. Here I am again playing Modern Warfare 2 as it comes back around, as things do in the video game industry. So I am not a annual, you know, that's a lie. I played some of Blackout Mode and I played some of Warzone. So I played those. I forgot about those. Mostly Blackout, but Warzone I really enjoy. Just no one else I like playing video games with liked it, so we didn't play it that much. But yeah, anyway, here I am dropping back into Call of Duty, the multiplayer. Now, the new Warzone mode was not available in this beta. It was just, I know these games have tons and tons of modes now. I've really not been keeping up, and they all blur together. But at least available for the beta, they had, you know, your traditional team deathmatch. They had the domination, which is the waypoint capture mode. They had their WA battlefield mode, something called invasion, which was kind of like the battlefield mode, except more of a fucking just shit show. Because it dropped in, it drops in AI-controlled characters, combatants. So it just kind of fluffs out the battlefield with more dudes to shoot. And less objective, so it's more of just like a giant crazy free-for-all like that. It seemed to be the intention of the mode, at least as I thought. I don't know if there was tactics involved, but they went over my head. I only got in on one of those. It was also a very long match to play that one. But so I tried out the other two things, but mostly spent time in good old team deathmatch and domination. There was only a couple maps involved in the beta, I assume slash hope there will be plenty more in the final release. And yeah, it's got all those Call of Duty things I remember, though, you know, spruced up and iterated on, you know, 12 years in between, so it's familiar yet unfamiliar. You have your perks and your progressions and your kill streaks, and you unlock guns and you gain experience with your guns that unlock more parts for your guns that you can put on your guns and get better with your guns and customize your guns. And there's a lot more shit you can do on them now. There's like, you can like customize all sorts of parts on them, which is pretty cool. But the progression in the beta was limited, so there's only so much you could do. But
no, was it limited to level 30? And I think level Big 30 Adam was hit level 30.
He did hit level 30. I did not hit level 30. I was in the teens or tweens somewhere, with as much as I got in there. But you know, it felt good. I was having fun as soon as I muted all the other players.
Fair.
Just very doing fair. What I used to do and running around, it did take me, you know, at first I felt, yeah, like I said, like a very old man, but after a couple matches, I kind of got some kind of muscle memory returned to me, and I was like, okay, I remember how to, like, move around and aim and shoot, even though you can, like, mantle over things now. I don't know how recent that has been added. Probably when they did Warzone, they needed to do that. Yeah, I was having a good time, having some fun. Definitely my star moment was when I got a hold of a kill streak that turns you into one of the juggernaut things, which is the armored dudes with the miniguns, and I was just smoking people. That felt really good. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It definitely has got me thinking about that full release, because there's going to be a lot in that larger retail package. You know, the more it's going to have the stuff I'm more interested in, namely the campaign. And Warzone. But yeah, like, I mean, Modern Warfare 2, the original, was the, like, Call of Duty I spent the most time with by far. I played a ton of that game. So yeah, I don't know. I hope it's awesome.
Cool.
In the end when it comes out, but it was definitely a lot of fun.
The full game is going to be releasing October 28th for $70. Should we be keeping our eye on this one? $70 is just going to be like the new price we're gonna have to put up with. So
yeah until it's on Game Pass, right?
All in due time.
I mean, I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed playing Cold War. I didn't play the one last year, but it sounds like nobody did, so whatever. We'll see. I don't know. Give us a code. I'll check out the full game there, Actoblision.
Sounds good. All right, next game to talk about is Amnesia, Later X Crowd, or Later Cross Crowd, developed by Idea Factory and Design Factory, published by Idea Factory International, released September 20th on the Switch for $49.99. The fan disc companion to Amnesia Memories, featuring two previously only released in Japan. Within Amnesia Later and Amnesia Crowd, each title will provide a multitude of different story scenarios, as well as new mini-games. Deepen your relationship with the main characters and sub-characters of the original game and see what sparks. Brooke, what is going on in this, I guess, two-pack?
Oh, yeah. Me and the Tomei community. Excuse me, the Tomei community. And
hey, Brooke, how many hours have you put into this game?
Oh my God, maybe my coworkers are listening. Honestly, it hasn't been that many. This one's more like 20. Amnesia Memories, okay. I put a shitload of hours into it. But this one, you know, it's a fan disc, and let me just get started here. But yeah, I'm a big fan of the Amnesia franchise. I pre-ordered the limited edition of this game, as everybody knows. So I was expecting good things, but a lot of the community didn't realize, you know, we're going to crack into this puppy on the 22nd when it drops, and it is two full games in one. And that's no joke. There are a lot of fan discs that kind of boast that, but this is the real deal. This game's actually combined localized Switch port for Amnesia Later, which came out in Japan in 2012, and Amnesia Crowd, which came out in 2013. They're both full titles. This is a crazy good value for fans of Amnesia Memories, which we reviewed last week on the show here. Lots of scenarios, tons of scenarios for each character, and not just the characters, not just the love interests that give you the routes. Lots of side characters get explored here, which is nice. Not every fan disc does that, and this fan disc goes really hard. Lots of new outfits for everyone. And Rika's looking good. If you're still mad at her for trying to murder you in one of the timelines in Amnesia Memories, hey, too bad. Get over it, because she's here. She's fucking hot. She's looking great. And she's cool with you now. And if you can't wrap your head around that kind of logic and thinking, like, what are you doing playing Tomei games to begin with? You're not going to have a good time here.
Quick question right off the bat. What exactly is a fan disc?
Ooh, that's a really good question that actually perfectly segues me into the next parts of my notes, which almost never happens. So thank you, Joe. That was
Yay.
Awesome. Fan discs
didn't even
are,
plan that.
we got there, people, and you can feel that it's real. Fan discs are always different depending on the Tomei game. A really good example of a fan disc that is different than this one is the fan disc to Collar Malice, which is another incredibly popular Tomei game. The fan disc to Collar Malice is almost a continuation of like the 80-hour plus game that is Collar Malice, which is like a behemoth. That's this huge, very, very long, intense drama. And there are some routes in that game where the routes end kind of sad and they're heartbreaking, and you almost have to play this fan disc that came out 2 hours later to get the full story. A lot of people were really upset that one of the routes in that game ends the way that it does, and in that sequel, that fan disc. Some fan discs aren't exactly sequels. That was a true sequel, and it goes really deep. While this is an incredible value, even if it's just one of the two titles we're getting with this release, this is totally different than that. It's not a continuation of the plot at all. It's sort of like it's like if we went back in time and things happened a little bit differently, plus a lot of bonus scenarios. Now, it isn't all just fluff and humor. There's a lot of drama in here. There are a lot of like really serious moments, and there is a lot of good quality time you can spend with all the characters. But if you're looking for a game that delves deeper into the world of Amnesia Memories and like takes you really far into like the sci-fi and fantasy of it and goes hard in the same way that the first game did with the plot, you know, this isn't it, but it's still a really great experience. Interestingly enough, I just learned this even though I played the hell out of both games, and I've easily put over 100 like actual real hours, not just me staring at the screen thinking about my life hours, into Collar Malice and Amnesia. They're both by the same visual artist, and I did not know that. And it's sort of her 10 years later with like tons of more talent. So that's pretty fun. And there's tons of updated art in this fan disc as well. At this point, anything I can say about the environment is kind of spoilers, since we're not going with like a heavy dramatic plot thing. We're going with like environmental scenarios and getting to know the characters. But I would say, like, even as someone who really waited for this release and hyped it up to myself and nothing was really going to live up to it, I believe this is a buy it. I know Joe didn't ask me, you know, what's my rating yet, but I'm just going to go right into it. I believe this is a buy it, even if you're hoping that this is more of a Collar Malice scenario and you're a little disappointed listening to this, hearing that it's not. I think it's a buy it anyway. I think you should try it out if you're a fan of Amnesia. And I think it's really awesome if you're going to buy the pack that they're offering, both physically and digitally, to get Amnesia Memories and this sort of all-in-one, and you save a little money. If even part of you is thinking about doing that and playing over Amnesia, the first game, and then going right into this next one, which is sort of like companion fan disc slash very light sequel, I would go ahead and do it because it's really awesome to play through the first game and kind of have this waiting for you, because it does do some Collar Malice type stuff where like a couple of these ends you can get to are super heartbreaking. It'll just rip it out of your chest. And this is definitely there for you to ease the pain. It's very comforting to know as you're finishing up the first game that like, hey, I have all these hours waiting for me. This isn't really over. And that's really fun. One final note I'll just leave us with. If you were a fan of Waka from the first game, there is a Waka world in Amnesia. It's either Later or Crowd. I can't remember which one. And Waka is just a delight. If you're not familiar with this character, he's your boss at the maid cafe you work at. And every morning when you get to work, he makes you scream the words, "The customer is the enemy," 50 times just to get you ready for the day. He's very hurt and traumatized from some war he was in, but no one knows what war that is. Really fun character and guy. You can hang out with him a lot. And if that's all I knew about this game, I'd buy it, and Waka fans out there are going to buy this just because of that. So this is a really fun time. This is a buy it from me.
Nice. So $50. It is 50 on each Later Cross Crowd and 50 for Memories. So it's $100 if you got the money. Is it worth buying both of them?
If you are an Atome fan, and one thing I wanted to say last week is that although I'm a big Amnesia fan, this is a deep Atome cut. Like, you kind of have to be into these games to really enjoy these and justify paying $50 or $60. What I will say is, if we were buying all these games in Japan, we would be paying a whole lot more. We'd be paying full price for both Later and Crowd if we were playing these before they're ported to Switch in America. So if you like these sort of games and you typically spend around this amount of money on them every big release, which a lot of us fans do, you could justify this easily by saving $50 or $60 by kind of getting all three. And both games, both Amnesia Memories, which we covered last week, and this game are heavily updated for this modern world we're living in.
Cool. Works for me. Right. Next game to talk about is Shovel Knight Dig, developed by Nitrome Limited and Yacht Club Games, published by Yacht Club Games, released September 23rd on Switch and PC for $24.99, also available as part of Apple Arcade. Meet new friends and foes, visit strange lands, and outfit yourself in your quest to keep the entire land from collapsing underfoot. Jump, slash, and dig your way down an ever-changing chasm of...
dropping bits!
Hey, Lloyd dropping bits. Thank you, Lloyd. Down an ever-changing chasm of mystery and Shovel Knight Dig, an all-new Shovel Knight adventure. Tim, tell us, what is Shovel Knight Dig?
Oh, Jesus. I was just, like, leaning up on the arm of my chair after lounging luxuriously during a Brooks review there, and then I just, my elbow slipped and it was not great. Anyways, weird. Sorry, I'm gonna close this. I got distracted like reading Steam reviews for this game. It's interesting. There's very mixed opinions out there, which I did not expect
on the Shovel Knights.
For Shovel Knight. It's interesting. Because I quite enjoyed it, though I see some of the criticisms, and I'll bring them up. But yeah, Shovel Knight Dig. This is a new Shovel Knight game from Yacht Club. I believe Pocket Dungeon was somebody else. So yeah, it's the Yacht Club guys doing something new with Shovel Knight that isn't building onto Shovel Knight, but still building on to Shovel Knight as a franchise. So this is a game that's kind of, it's like Shovel Knight and SteamWorld Dig made a beautiful baby in a way of things, in that you are Shovel Knight, you're chilling at your campfire, and this asshole just comes drilling down through and steals your purse, and you got to go down and get that thing. So the scope of the game is digging downwards. This is a run-based deal, so the stages you're going through, they are randomly generated, and there are different biomes and tile sets that you will come across as you are making your descent. Though I felt like is that there was a pretty good variety to the layouts and the traps of the different stages in the number of runs that I went through during review, it did not feel like super repetitive to me. I don't know if that's just luck of the random rolls or what, but I definitely was never feeling like, oh man, I've seen this room before, like, you know, similar hazards, but I was kind of impressed with some of the unique things that would be kind of scattered in there that, like, you know, you couldn't just like little platforming bits or shoveling bits that you couldn't just kind of randomly gin up, and felt more crafted. So yeah, you'll drill down. Each area has like three stages to it. When you get down to the bottom of a stage, you will fight a boss, a knight themed boss, much like the mainline Shovel Knight game. Every time you finish a stage, you usually get a choice of two different paths to dig down, and there will be a little sign that gives you a hint as to what traps or benefits you might find by digging down that path, which is cool. And like some areas will be gated off by keys. Like keys are things that you can find scattered about, or enemies will drop, or you can purchase from the horse shop up top to bring a key with you from the start. That can unlock separate paths or side rooms, or specifically rooms that will get you like new relics, or artifacts, I think is what they're called in the Shovel Knight verse. They're basically like sub-weapons from Castlevania or whatever to supplement your just usual shoveling. And it'll be a thing where you need to like find them or pay to unlock them for them to start dropping in the world. Some of them, you know, there are active relics. There are some that are passive. There are upgrades for like your movement. There are upgrades for your like your shovel skills, to help you dig through. But the levels are laid out like you're always moving downward, but the levels are built out in a way where it's a kind of a combination. Like there'll be some platforming here, but there will also be like dirt you need to dig through. Like you need to go Mr. Driller on it to find your way through. And you can only dig to the side and down. You can't dig up unless you find this one upgrade for your horns that lets you punch out dirt above you. So you got to be careful, because it is hard to go back upwards in this game. It is a game about going down. There will be enemies scattered around that you need to fight and consider. I have questions for the idea of having randomly spawning flying enemies. Like, this ain't Ghouls and Ghosts. It's annoying. I know somebody.
I agree.
Yeah. It's a little unfair sometimes, because of the way that they can just like pass through matter, and sometimes they'll be just like a little off screen or a little like below you where you can't hit them, and it's just an annoying thing to deal with. And it's okay a little bit, but sometimes I feel like they spawn a bit too much, even if it's not like an area where they're telling you ahead of time, hey, these are gonna spawn a ton. And it can just, it feels like a crutch to make the game like a little more difficult.
Yeah.
Didn't love that. When you're digging down, like whenever you jump, if you're over something that's diggable, your Shovel Knight will automatically do like a down thrust to dig it out. Like you don't get to decide to do that. I saw someone theorizing that like this game is also on phones, and that might have been a conceit made to the phone players, just like, okay, if you're jumping down, you're just automatically going to dig, which is not the end of the world, but it definitely took me some getting used to. And sometimes I still and this is another light problem with the game, is that it's a horizontal, you know, it's a horizontal game, like is the view resolution of it, and it feels like something that would be better off held vertically, like with more of a vertical view of the hole you're going down, because sometimes it's hard to like get a good idea of, or if the game I guess was zoomed out a little bit more just so you could see a little bit more below you, or see enemies coming from above you, or what traps you're going to fall into. I feel like I've learned that there are tells, like with where they place gems and such, to let you know that you're not just going to fall straight down onto spikes most of the time. though that did take me a little bit to pick up when I started playing the game. But all that having said, those are you know, kind of my criticisms there. But they don't break the game. For me, I still had a good time digging and going through and collecting money and unlocking more things, and then like poking around and finding more secrets to and side paths and stuff. I think when I first started, maybe I was just like setting my expectations low, but I was just kind of expecting like a very straightforward series of areas moving down. But there, you know, there's more than just one. It's more than just like, oh, you go from the mushroom area to the fire area to this other area. It's like, no, there's like other branches off to the side with different bosses.
So cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. There is a guy up at the camp, because as soon as this hole appears, like just a freaking camp throws itself up around, because I don't know, whenever Shovel Knight's adventuring, it's a fucking party. So everyone's got to be around. Make money off of him. There's commerce to be made where Shovel Knight be adventuring, I guess. But there is a guy who you can pay. There's like an upfront fee of like some amount of gems, but then you can buy tickets from him and he will smuggle you down to lower levels. Like, and you can skip the higher levels, which is good. And I didn't feel like the price of those tickets was obscene. Like when you die, like obviously you lose like your artifacts and items you picked up, but the, like in Shovel Knight, some of your money goes out into little flying sacks, which will then reappear on the next run. And sometimes they're hard to get, just kind of depending on when they spawn, but they don't put that much money in them. Most of your money sticks with you and goes back to your bank, which is good. So even if you're kind of sucking ass, you're still building up money to purchase more things, which is good. I always hate to feel like I'm just kind of like spinning my wheels in these games. I like to feel like I'm making progress and unlocking more stuff. And I think this does a good job of that. Like, it does not penalize you too harshly when you die. So death can come quickly. You only have like 4 health nodes by default, and like you land on spikes a couple times or get like bonked by an enemy. You can get in some real fuckered situations that don't really feel like your fault, but sometimes shit happens. The music in this game slaps. It is
so good.
I was gonna say, it is the return of the maestro.
Yeah, Jake it is. Kaufman. It is. Yeah. Always good to hear his stuff and just hear new music from him in general. I miss that guy, but yeah, he's still got it. He's still just like,
yeah,
the mushroom area is like, okay. But like every area below that, I'm just like, God damn. Like, yeah. Like
soundtrack
I'm
available
like,
on Bandcamp.
I'll be buying that shit.
So good.
Might totally wait for the next Bandcamp Friday. So Jake gets more money, but I'll be buying it. And the game looks good too. Just, I mean, their art has been good since the company's inception, but this is Shovel Knight original is more of a 8-bit homage, and this is definitely shined up to more of a 16-bit sheen, and it looks good. Like, the characters all around the camp look great and are so like interesting to look at like on their own. The knight designs are cool. Some of them are returning. I don't know if they're favorites, but they returned, so you might recognize some guys down there. I found it to be a lot of fun.
Brooke and Purnell, I know you both dabbled in this. Did you want to chime in? Anything you want to say?
I'm actually staying late on the show just because I need to say this is, I found this to be an enchanting and incredible game. I really, really, really loved it. I thought it was just nuts good. I'm kind of pushing myself before Purnell over here, but I just want to say I'm going to answer the question on everybody's mind about this game. Can you pet the owl? Yes, you can. You walk over to the owl when you start the game and you press down and you can give a little pat. You can also hit and piss off the owl on accident.
Bro. I did that several times.
Oh my God. And then I'm like running around the screen being like, I'm sorry, dude, I'm sorry. But he didn't care. And like, he kind of wouldn't forgive me. And it was a bummer. I was like, I just pet you, dude. But yeah, you can't pet the pigeon on the one guy's head on the top at the camp, but that's okay. Pigeon's already perched on a guy's head. It's getting plenty of attention. But seriously, I can't agree more with everything that like Tim said. Like even the little things, even the complaints. Like this game is a buy it from me. If you can't tell, I found it to be like just really wonderful and magical. I do agree the flying enemies feel a little like a crutch to make the game more difficult, and it's frustrating. It's like, y'all don't need this. Like, this game reminds me of Spelunky in a very good way. It's an instant buy-in for me for like pulling that off, even though it's got completely different things going on. Yeah, that's the only part of the game where I'm like, don't be trying to take like the frogs out of the swamp from Spelunky and just like make an enemy difficult. If you're going to make it difficult, make it work correctly, or it's just going to piss people off. And that's really my only complaint about the game. The sound design is like, and the music is actually literally terrifying. Like, I can't relax when I play this game because I'm overwhelmed by the talent that went into the music and the sound design. Like, you'll be going into Jake a room and things will get muffled. Holy shit. Oh, it's so good, man. And I didn't play Pocket Dungeon, so I didn't understand that these are the original Shovel Knight guys and that wasn't. But that makes sense to me to hear Tim say that. I'm really glad I got to hear that, because like as soon as I loaded this game up, within 30 seconds I was like, wow, this is definitely made by the same guys who made that world, because it's just like magical and it's just like it's alive. Like, I don't know how they pull it off where they have made two games now that I know of that are just like really crisp and arcadey and like have those awesome pings and stuff going on, but yet it feels really live and breathing and immersive. Like the NPCs feel more real than a lot of live action characters for me. They'll just be these little touches, like when you're talking to the guy in the shop that pops up by the camp, like he'll sell you stuff and be like, oh man, that looks great on you, but the word great will just like shake. And there are just like tons of tiny little immersive touches and sound design stuff. I think it's an amazing pixely roguelike experience. And I too was on Steam earlier, like Tim, being like, what the fuck, I don't really understand the negative reviews that I am seeing. Like,
it seems like a lot of people got through the game very quickly.
Well, I don't have that problem with games.
No, I mean, a lot of people are just like, yeah, I finished it in like 3 hours. And I'm like, what? Wow.
I opened up the game and 3 hours later, I was done crying about how beautiful the horse guy was. So, you know, those people need to slow down, smell the flowers or whatever, touch the grass. Oh, God. I don't know, man. He looks so cool.
I did not have the problem of finishing the game very quickly. I guess, I don't know. I mean, and a lot of people are comparing it to other recent very good roguelikes like Rogue Legacy 2. And I'm not about to come out here and say it's better than Rogue Legacy 2 or Hades. I just had a lot of fun with it. I'm also not going to defend against like random people on Steam. I'm just surprised that like it's mixed. I'm just surprised. I had a great time with it.
Pernell, was there anything you wanted to chime in with?
I can follow that. I'm just going to say it's good.
Pernell is speechless.
Were you a fan of OG Shovel Knight? Did you play that game? I played it a bit.
I played the shit out of those games.
I had it on the original Wii, played it a lot there, and then repurchased it again as a treasure trove. But surprisingly, I never played any of the offshoots they did after Shovel Knight. I just played
my first one.
And the weird thing about Shovel Knight is that I got to the last level and then proceeded to never play through the level. Instead, I would just boot the game up, do the Explodatorium in the King Knight level, and then turn it off and then come back and do it again.
Oh my God, Pernell, I made it to the final boss of Shovel Knight and like I just could not beat it. And I actually like I watched my friend complete the game, and that's one of the only times I've done that with a game.
Oh, it was a rough final boss in that game?
Yeah. For me.
I remember it being tough.
Yeah. It's like, now I wonder if I could go back and play that, because like if I can play Celeste, I can play any fucking platformer, like whatever. Yeah. But like that one, I remember getting super frustrated trying for a long time and then finally like wanting to see the end of the game. And I'm not proud, but it happened.
Yeah, I backed the original Shovel Knight Kickstarter.
Oh, nice.
And then waited for it to come out. And then I bought it on PlayStation so I could play it on PSP. Like nice. When I think when the Spectre Knight one came out, and then when King Knight came out, I bought the Treasure Trove on Switch and played it on there. So I have paid for Shovel Knight the original 3 times, and
that's awesome.
I have zero regrets to show for that. So
it is a work of art.
I love it, and they did so much work on that first game and added so much to it.
Especially for early adopters who got in when $15-$20 game.
Yeah.
And now because of how much content they put in, it's like a $40 game.
because it's four games worth of fucking content.
And they follow through multiple years of content.
Yeah. I guess I would say, and I know Joe's about to ask me whether to buy it, like, even if you end up having, I guess, the 3 hour experience and you skip having fun with this game, as a roguelike and as something that is made by Yacht Club, I would expect this to get. I would expect them to hear that feedback and to continue working on it, even if you have end up having a less than stellar experience. But everybody on this podcast had a great time, it sounds like. So yeah. I'm going to say you should buy it.
I'm going to say it too, man.
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah, buy it.
Cool. All right. Brooke, you're heading out, right?
Yeah. Night, night, you guys. Time for me to eat my dinner. It's McDonald's.
Oh, man.
Shocking.
Hey, Brooke, have you seen anything about Trombone Champ?
No, I haven't. Ugh.
You need to look it up.
I know, and I'm going to listen. Like, I'm looking forward to your review. Okay. I was telling Joe earlier I'm going to listen to this app, so make it good because I'm listening in the future. Oh,
shit.
God, we're going to have a listener.
Someone might listen, man, and it might be me.
Yeah.
All right, well, the next game to talk about is... Yep, next game to talk about is Trombone Champ, developed and published by Holy Wow, released September 15th on Steam for $14.99. Honk, blow, and toot your way through over 20 songs, collect all 50 unique tromboner cards, and uncover the mysteries of the tromboniverse. Do you have what it takes to become the true trombone champion? Tim, are you the trombone champ?
I am not yet, I don't think. I don't have quite all of the cards yet, and I am still unearthing some secrets of the tromboniverse, it would appear. But I have played at least all, I have played a lot of the content that is involved in this initial release. So yeah, Trombone Champ. You may have heard of this game in the last week, since I feel like it kind of...
It blew up.
Took the internet by storm. It tooted up. It did. very quickly, it seemed like, you know, this got out there and everybody heard about it, was playing and checking out. This is a trombone based rhythm game. it's which, you know, you never thought you'd see. We're unfortunately past the point of having trombone controllers, but we do have this. So this game is incredible. It is absurd. I was in tears laughing within the first 5 minutes of playing the game for varying reasons. The fact that the opening movie is a parody of Dark Souls was not something I was expecting and did not know I needed in my life, but is fantastic. And that is incredibly not where the Dark Souls references end. and then you get in there and they put you into your first. I believe you pick your boner, your tromboner. First, which they have a few in there who have cool names, none of which I remember off the top of my head, so don't ask me. And so the way the gameplay works, this is a mouse and keyboard game. They don't have gamepad support yet. You will use the mouse to slide the mouse. The mouse is to emulate the sliding of the trombone in and out. It is initially set to invert to simulate the motion of the trombone and have it match the tone in the game. I found this to be unplayable, so I quickly switched it. But you use the mouse, just pushing it just up and down. It slides your cursor up and down this line on the left side of the screen. And then you can just hit either a mouse click or any key on the keyboard to toot. And you know, notes, the note chart will come at you from right to left, and as it hits the line, you will adjust your cursor to where the note is incoming, and then you will push a button to toot, and you will hold it out as to the length of the note, or it may go up or down in pitch as the note holds out, which is what you do with the trombone. You know, you slide that thing out and it'll go. and yeah, that's the game. That's it. It's very, this is what you do into the game. It's very simple, straightforward. You use the mouse to slide up and down. You use the other buttons to toot. It is so much fun. It is ridiculous because you are controlling the pitch. So in the songs in the game, there's 20 songs at launch, and most of them are takes on, you know, royalty-free familiar tunes, like Take Me Out to the Ball Game, the national anthem of the United States, of Canada, some classical music, Beethoven's Fifth, some classical music pieces, Hava Nagila. There is a ska song in there because apparently people kept pestering the developer to put one in, so he put one in. That's what the description of the song is. They'll have a difficulty rating. You will be rated on, you're basically scored on, you know, the timing of when you toot and how well you hold the cursor towards the center of the line as it's going through, and it kind of scores you on an average of that from perfect to nasty. And I wasn't quite sure initially if nasty was, it was like good or bad nasty, you know, but it's bad nasty in this one. And you will build up a like score combo meter that flashes champ in the upper left. And yeah, you're rated at the end of each song, you know, on, you know, CBAS scale of your score. You'll be awarded with a certain number of toots for completing a song, which is the game's currency, which you could then take over to the collectible area to buy packs of cards of famous tromboners and some other things. if you get duplicate cards, you can then turn them into turds, and you can use a certain amount of turds to craft cards you don't have.
Nice.
And it's poops. It makes turd noises, and there's like little turds that will form together on the screen to make the cards. it's poops.
This sounds so ridiculous.
It is extremely ridiculous because the thing is, you're not going to, like, just, at least in my experience, very little of what the noise you're making sounds correct. Because it's not a thing where the pitch is off and it just kind of makes like a record scratch or like a twang sound or something. Like, no, you hear how wrong it sounds. you are playing the you are playing a virtual trombone, and it just sounds ridiculous.
Every video I have seen for this game has me in tears giggling.
It's so funny, and there's so much goofy shit going on in like the backgrounds. There's lots of air horns. Like, you never know when, I don't know, the face of Mozart is going to fade in the background or whatever else. It's very silly, and I love it. There's some shit going on with baboons, and I have not quite made it to the bottom of that yet. Because at a certain point, like, that becomes what you're... So there's a bunch of stuff to unlock, too, and I have unlocked one thing, like a wireframe version of the, you know, the trombonist. And there's, like, other seemingly instruments or, like, trombone looks, and I haven't quite figured out how to unlock those yet. I'm hoping it's not just, like, grinding toots and dropping them into a proverbial bucket. But there's definitely some mysteries in this game to unravel, believe it or not.
So it is deeper than one might think.
The gameplay, I'm still waiting for like some kind of like Frog Fractions-esque turn to this game, quite frankly. I still feel like some shit is up and like the whole thing is just a cover, but I don't know. I just don't know. But the thing is, the game's a lot of fun. There is a free play mode where you can just sit there and kind of toot to your heart's content. Importantly, the game is advertised as having zero microtransactions, which is great. And the developer has intent of adding more songs to the game, which is fantastic. This seems like a slam dunk. Like, it's just so fun. The only problem is, and this is not a problem I had, but I did see this again in Steam reviews, is that some people had some issues with motion sickness. Because I'm assuming, because, you know, just like the way the notes are moving across the screen, the speed of which they're coming across, maybe combined with some of the stuff going on in the background. And that is something the developer has already said he is working on to reduce some of the effects, the graphical effects, to make them a little easier on people who have sensitivities to that, which is good. But I mean, The time I had with this game was great. This seems like a fantastic thing to break out at parties, to impress a, you know, a lady or gentleman you have over.
You heard it here, folks. Trombone Champ is going to get you laid. $15. What's your verdict?
Yeah, see, you should buy this game as quickly as possible to enjoy what the world of tromboning. it's great. It's a lot of fun. Just playing it yourself, because I mean, I don't know, like, I hope it doesn't burn out like a lot of other meme-ish games. Like, I felt like Goose Game was fun and is more fun in like concept, but this was actually a lot of fun to play for me, and I am interested to see what songs get added.
As long as it's just the one ska song, right?
There needs to be more. But I don't know how many of those are going to be like royalty free, so.
Yeah. You get Carnage in touch with like Less Than Jake or Goldfinger or someone and send them to the devs.
Some ska songs that aren't going to charge. Somebody, some ska band scratching along is going to have some good trombone songs they can donate to Trombone Champ, I'm sure.
That would be amazing. Somebody.
We'll see. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's it for you, Tim.
It is.
Any final words before you head out?
It's time for me to either go to bed or finish Live Alive, because I'm literally on the last boss right now.
Oh,
yeah. Also a good game, also worth buying, especially as we approach the holiday season where it might be had for, you know, a good price. But
I just picked it up like last week. I still got to fire it up.
Ah, it's so good. It is. Yeah.
I heard it's not classic. That long either. It's a nice shorter one.
I'm at like 20 hours for finishing it. Yeah, I don't know. How,
that works.
Yeah, no, I think that's fine. I think you can beat it in less than that. But yeah, it's also. All right. So, well, it's also very easy to like play in chunks, because you have these chapters where you play as different characters across time. And each one of those chapters, it like ranges in length from like a half hour to like an hour and a half, 2 hours. So it's actually very easy to sit down for a sitting and play one of those chapters and feel like you did something. And not just like, well, I did grinding for 45 minutes and then I got to a town and then I had to spend 45 minutes exploring a fucking town. Sometimes exploring a town in a modern RPG is so goddamn exhausting, because they're so big and there's so many nooks and crannies, and it's just like, oh god, not a town, not right now, I don't want to do this. This is pretty brisk, well paced, doesn't get overwhelming with combat until towards the, wouldn't call it overwhelming, but you know, it's well balanced with the combat until the end, and then there's kind of more of it as you close in on the end. But I've had a great time with it. So
Chris, did you play that one?
Which one?
Live Alive.
Yeah, I've played Live Alive. I'm almost I'm almost to the last chapter.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's great. I love it.
Yep. Yeah.
What about you, Pernell? Have you played it?
Sitting on the coffee table with the stack.
Nice.
I was about to say, yeah, he bought it. It's in shrink wrap somewhere.
No, it's not in shrink. I get gold points for that.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to redeem those right away, or else they'll time out and you'll miss them.
Yep. Which is bullshit.
Yeah, it
is. It's bullshit when you're a company that doesn't drop the price of your fucking games. Like, give me a fucking break, dude. I still paid money for this.
when I bought it, I was like, I need to play this like immediately so that I can like hurry up and finish it up and then, you know, get back to other stuff. And it's been like a month still.
Yeah, no, that was me. I started playing it immediately, but just with kind of the fervor of the end of August and beginning of September, and just, you know, reviews and shit being in the way, it's taken me a while to actually get through it.
Yeah. Oh, work.
Oh, life. All right, I gotta go.
Yay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Next game, Jack Move, developed by So Romantic, published by Hype Train Digital, released September 20th on Xbox One and Switch for $19.99. Jack Move is a JRPG that features a unique blend of gritty cyberpunk storytelling, turn-based battles, and beautiful modern pixel art. Take on the role of Noah, a vigilante hacker who is thrust into a world of murder, kidnapping, and dark research after her father goes missing. Pernell, what's going on in Jack Move?
RPG, to piggyback off the last review.
Let's see how quick I can do this. So basically, this game is fairly short. You play as Noah. You are investigating. Well, you're first starting as a hacker, which you always are, but then you also eventually start investigating a mysterious mystery revolving around your evil corporation and your father. The game plays over the series, a course of like one large city and then the surrounding areas. Surprisingly enough, the environment is not that big because they kind of want to keep everything compact. And yet somehow, despite that, they're able to tell a pretty cool story with the limited amount of space you play through and work with. Combat takes place in a very odd way in that it's cool, but I'm not sure what is even happening in the context of the game, because you have real world encounters, and then when a scuffle occurs, you go onto this weird like plane and you fight the opponents using chips that you put into a deck. So the chips work in the form of attacks that come in the form of like three different types, and I can't remember what they all are. It's like cyberware, wetware, and like electroware. Actually, that's what it is. Ta-da, three types. One is weak against the other, and strong. And one is weak against one, strongest the other, and then neutral otherwise. And you'll use those different types of attacks to affect your opponents. You, on the other hand, don't have a concern for something like that. They just attack you with whatever. You also have a base normal attack. The ones I described, the wetware, cyberware, electroware, use up SP, or data points, rather, in this game, to do, whereas your normal attack does not. The cool element is that if you need to defend for a turn, for example, let's say, for example, you know a big attack is coming, or the opponent might have, like, three attacks in a row compared to your one, you have an option to do something called caching, which allows you to go on defensive, but also move your turn to follow your next turn. So if you have one turn coming up, you can cash, defend yourself, and now you've got two turns coming up. Sounds kind of weird in a sense, like you might be thinking, well, the net gain is just, there's no net gain, you still have two turns. But yeah, but you're also defending yourself, so, and you have two turns in a row, so duh, that's why it's better. Gameplay is pretty much that, those battles, but then normally moving around the map is running, like you just run from zone to zone. There's a ticker in the upper right corner that indicates when a battle is about to start. You have the ability to, without using a special item, mind you, tweak that to have battles run frequently, not so frequently, or not at all. Be careful doing that though, because if you don't do it, use it responsibly, you might find yourself outclassed for a boss battle. So I only really turned off battles when I needed to backtrack for a side quest, in which case there are a few in the game. But it essentially equivalents to a Link's Awakening type item swapping quest where you go to one guy, give him an item, he gives you another item in return, which you then give to someone else, blah, blah, blah. And eventually you get a really cool thing as a reward. You should do that. there's a few other types of side quests too in the game, like quick, typical errands, nothing major. But again, the game is meant to be short and the side quests don't even really take all that much time. The in-game store, you can see pretty much everything you can buy in the game from the very beginning, and they're level locked. So it's essentially saying, well, in five more levels, I'll buy the next level version of wetware, and I can buy the best level of wetware. You install these things onto your deck, by the way. When you buy new skills, you install them onto a deck, which is composed of a block of RAM. It's basically amounts of RAM, and each software upgrade costs a certain amount of RAM. You install it until you can't anymore. And that's how you equip yourself with new attacks and crap like that. If you find yourself in the position where you need to change that, you can swap it on the fly in the middle of a battle or outside of a battle. No muss, no fuss. All in all, I think the game's a good deal of fun. The characters are fun to talk to. I like the ridiculously fake cyber slang they created for the game. And again, I think the most important thing is I like the fact that it's short, but it also tells a really good story and not wasting your time. For the price of $19.99, I'd say it's a solid buy. And that's the gist of it.
You didn't even like let me ask my question. Jeez.
I'm on time structure. Got snappy, snappy.
So this is a solid one to pick up?
I think it is. Definitely a bite.
Cool beans. All right, next up is Crossroads Inn, a fantasy tavern sim developed and published by Klebaiter. Released September 29th on the Switch for $19.99. In Crossroads Inn, a fantasy tavern sim, micromanagement goes head-to-head with a rich story. As the kingdom is in turmoil and a shift of power is expected, your inn will soon attract the attention of important political and military figures who are desperately trying to hold on to the reins of power. Will you stay neutral or become part of a large-scale drama full of political intrigue? Chris, what did you do?
I set up some tables and gave people some wine.
Cool. $20. Money. What's your verdict? No. What is this game?
Okay, so yeah, this is basically it's a tavern simulator with a little bit of a twist. So you play as the apparently bodiless, you know, like kid, 18-year-old boy who is basically taking over his uncle's tavern. You're essentially like a godlike figure. You can, you know, use your finger of justice to, you know, point at tables and be like, build this and stuff. So yeah, it's very much like a Sims kind of game wherein you basically expand, build up, and kind of do stuff with this tavern. And as people come in and such, you know, you hire, you know, people to help you and, you know, have them serve wine and then later other things. Later they can cook food. You have people gather the food. and like I said, you just keep expanding and expanding and keep adding more and more things to the end till, you know, it starts to really bring in the money and get you like a good reputation and stuff. That's the core of it. However, there's a lot going on in this freaking game. So during your, like, you know, basically, the, like, fresh out of the tutorial gate, you are basically approached by a monopolizer who has, like, basically his greedy fingers all over the town's wine. Nobody can get wine without paying his exorbitant prices. So you immediately get into the game by settling up a smuggling network wherein you deal with bandits and like other like bootleggers essentially to like get, you know, wine into your inn so that you can like keep the lovely people of your town drunk at all times. And I do mean all times. Like there's a time cycle in here and some people just stay 24/7. But yeah, it, like I said, that's kind of how it starts. And then, you know, you sort of, the story kind of, comes in that way. It's like different characters will approach, different things will kind of like happen and expand and stuff. And the game all but tells you straight to your face that, your humble yet godlike, innkeeper character is the true and rightful king of this like kingdom or whatever. But, you know, that, and of course, that will put you at odds against, you know, several people that are introduced Elden Ring style at the very beginning of the game. There's just like this person who is the military commander and wants to keep power at all costs. And this person who is the wine person who is not very good at detecting smugglers. Because literally this guy will send the cops into your place, and if you pass enough checks, then they just won't find the wine that you're serving people who are currently drunk in your inn. So yeah, it's weird things like that. A lot of the conflict in the game, it comes from all sides, really, but there's not really like violence or anything. What it is that you end up talking to people and having to pass basically speechcraft like checks, and the more you use one, whether you win or fail, the better your craft goes in one of five different areas. So it's like am I still here? Okay,
yeah,
I saw
you cut out for a little bit, but you're back.
Okay, hopefully it doesn't go completely down. I've been having that problem. So yeah, basically like a lot of the dialogue in the game like ends up in like giving you five different options. Each one is attached to a certain stat that goes up as you use it, basically. So if you want to be like a no nonsense analytical type, if you want to be passionate, if you want to be like kind of rude, all of those will help you in dealing with different people from different walks of life. And so like that's a leveling up kind of thing. There's literally like I'm not going to go too far into the gameplay stuff because there's a lot here, but There's like three types of gossip that you can actually level up. Like, so you can level up three different flavors of gossip that's going to help you gain skills and like, you know, win like influence and stuff. And you know, basically you also gain like experience in certain other things, and all of this will help you kind of, again, it can all go back into the inn where you build up, you know, nicer things, hire better people. People also that you hire can be like dregs that are like good for moving rocks and like, you know, stocking shelves and stuff. But then you got like servers, and literally like the servers also have stats. They'll have like things like this server is good, but also tends to go on smoke breaks a lot. Like, that's literally something you have to deal with on a stat-based level, and I kind of love that. And like I said, yeah, the service part of the thing is just ongoing, happens in real time. Don't worry about making customers happy. They will never be happy. They're just going to basically bark at you all the time. The idea is to just bring in money into your thing and do quests and, like, get your reputation up and stuff. And like I said, I definitely didn't get all the way to the end, but apparently all of this will eventually make you rule the world. So it's quite a to do, and lots of to doing it in. So what sets this Switch version apart? Oh, and I didn't mention, yeah, the graphics are actually pretty nice. They're they look like they're kind of like this cel shaded thing, but they also have like a little bit of a visual novel look to them as well. And you can like change the camera, you can rotate it around, you can make it flat, straight down, like, you know, birds or like a isometric kind of bird's eye view and stuff, which is pretty cool. The controls of the game, you have like little menus that like your right side menu is for like doing all your functions, your left side menus, one of them will have like your quests and like your stats and things like that. One of them will have like, you know, all your things like your gold, your gossip, your stars, and like your you can pause the action or play or fast forward. And the cool thing is also that the Switch version actually has a touchscreen option. So that's been kind of a something that some people have complained about this game's computer releases, that the cursor is kind of annoying. You just control the cursor with the stick if you like. There's also buttons that shortcut you to what you want to do. It's actually pretty intuitive for the amount of things that you can do in this game. I mean, you can definitely tell where they tried to keep it tight, but, you know, it's still, you know, if you got something like a stylus or something, then that's probably the best way to play this game is just touchscreen it. But yeah, it's actually pretty fun, and I really like the story. And it definitely keeps you busy. Like, it's pretty intense, like, the action that goes on all the time for something where you're not actually controlling an army and, like, you know, killing people or whatever. I mean, maybe that comes later, I don't know, but it's definitely a medieval job simulator for sure.
Nice. Well, at the time you put into it, $20, what's your verdict?
I like it. I think $20 is fair. I didn't see the one thing that I noticed, because I always like to, like, check other reviews of games. Well, there's not any reviews for the Switch version, but lots of people complained about the bugs in the Steam version, and I didn't run into any of them. I actually, this is pretty solid, so I would say, yeah, this might be the actual version to pick up if the Steam version isn't fixed by now, but I could be wrong. There could be some, you know, some stuff that I just missed, but I like it. I think it's a buy it.
Cool. All right, next up is CARL, which stands for Computer Automated Resource Locator, developed by Andrew Kennedy and Morningstar Game Studio, published by Morningstar Game Studio, released September 29th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Steam for $14.99. A mysterious factory outfitted with spiky ceilings, hidden passages, and deadly cogs. That's a lot for the average robot, but not for CARL. Help him uncover sinister secrets of Kent Industries in this 2D puzzle adventure filled to the brim with funky tunes and retro platformer goodness. Purnell, I know you were saying this is one of your surprises of the week, yeah?
Absolutely. I would say flat out, this is one of two big surprise titles I've came across this week, in that this game is really good. It feels a lot like a long-lost Genesis platformer, and I say that in the best way possible. You play this game in a sense where you kind of sneak into the factory by way of entering the dump, which, if you are a Pennsylvania local, that's a fun reference to say over and over again because it's a local reference. And if the creator of the game isn't from Pennsylvania, well, we got to find you the commercial. But it's a fantastic setting point for the game. And honestly, it's kind of cool, too, because I realized when I first got into the game, I started hearing the music. And I was like, this sounds a lot like Mimiga Town from Cave Story. Obviously not like a one-to-one match, but like I could hear similar tones. And then I walk into the dump's version of a bar, and what do I see on the wall? A picture of Quote. So I was like, well, there's that reference right there. Like it was definitely intentional. But the dump acts as like the central hub place for this game. Carl is tasked with infiltrating various areas of Kent Industries for his espionage tactics. And each area of Kent Industries is composed of about four or so levels that you can enter into. And when you do so, you are pretty much tasked with exploring these areas, locating three microchips, and then locating the exit elevator and getting out of Dodge. Carl can do a few things by default. He can jump, he can shoot, and he can run. That's what Carl can do. And it's freaking great. It doesn't even matter. Because when you're playing the game, he's a very fast robot. Jumping can be a little floaty, but you get used to it. But the music is exceptional. Like, I want the composer. I want to get him on my show. If you're listening to this, I do a music game podcast. I want you on it because I've been bopping to your OST since I started playing your game. And it's really cool that you could tell they had an actual interest in making the music good and, you know, up in the forefront, because when you enter a level, the music is kind of faint, and then Carl puts on headphones, and then when he puts the headphones on, the music becomes louder, which is basically you saying that Carl, the music you hear in the game is what Carl's listening to through his headphones, and when you pause the game, the music is quieter, which implies that he took the headphones off. So it's almost like him saying, time to get to work. And then he gets into work he gets. As you explore the levels, they find the microchips. There's also a variety of other little collectible items you can find. There are medals, which you can take to a person in the dump to upgrade various aspects of Carl's, you know, function, whether it be the shot speed, shot power, or shot frequency. For each threshold of medals, you can spend scrap, which is the refuse that is dropped off of discarded enemies, to purchase that upgrade to your gun. You can find CDs, which can be used at the bar by giving them to the jukebox to play music that's located in the game. Also, you can come across occasionally joysticks, which you can take to the bar to give to an individual as you play a bunch of really interesting arcade game knockoffs, or homages, I'll say, in this case. For example, there's a pretty interesting Robotron like copy in the game that I actually spent way too much time playing than I had business doing. It's a lot of love there. Each time you beat a boss, of which they are actually fairly colorful characters, you will get a gold chip, which can be then taken out of the factory to, you know, your creator in the back of a spy pickup truck to gain a new ability, for example, like a double jump. One thing about that I like is that when you enter a level after the upgrade, the levels are definitely tailored to utilize your new upgrades. The downside, to an extent, though it's not a big deal, is that those upgrades can make the previous levels a little more trivial, because suddenly having a double jump around puzzles that were intended to have a single jump is such a big deal, which makes going back for earlier, you know, missed pickups much simpler to do. But I can't state just how much I love this game. One of the boss levels even has a gear wall chasing that felt straight out of Kid Chameleon. And that was the first thing I was like, what is Kid Chameleon? All to the letter. And it was great. I had a ton of fun playing this game. It is one of those games where I need to speak highly of it, because I don't recall seeing any trailers for it. And I do feel like if I just saw it on the eShop, I would have just taken it as like, whatever, you know. But experiencing the game, the music, the dialogue that the characters in the dump have, of which you can actually rescue characters and send them to the dump to live there, and they have dialogue. It's just great. Everything about this game is wonderful. And I would like for more people to experience this game, especially if you're a fan of classic Genesis platformers. It reminded me of something, even though you didn't have the same abilities, it reminded me of like freaking James Pond codenamed RoboCod for some reason. I don't know why, but just that scope. So ultimately, I think Carl's a fantastic game. It's a surprise game, and it's a game that people should play. Even at the price point that's being asked for, I think it's worth that money.
No, it's only $15, so it's not like it's a pricey game.
You'd be surprised what people on the internet will say about prices. It looks like a $5 game.
Yeah, people bitch about everything. Yeah.
That is true. Very true. In this case, let them bitch because it's worth $15. It's a solid buy game by far. Worth the money.
If what I'm looking is correct, Andrew Kennedy, the developer, is also the composer. The soundtrack will be available on Steam when the game launches on the 29th. So keep your eyes peeled for that one on Thursday.
Mm-mm. All right with me.
So there you go. All right, next up is Unichrome, a 1-bit unicorn adventure developed by Super 8-Bit Rafa, published by Turnox, released September 15th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $14.99. Follow the platforming quest of a unicorn in search of color in this 1-bit adventure by gallery artist and oil painter Super 8-Bit Rafa. Relive the glory of the retro console era in the spirit of the classic Atari while experiencing how our heart-pounding platforming and soundtrack. I can't talk. Relive the glory of the retro console era. We're just going to ignore that I said that before. In the spirit... Okay. I'm terrible at my job. In the spirit of the classic Atari, while experiencing heart-pounding platforming and shoot-em-up action, prepare for an arcade delight with tight controls, refreshing game mechanics, cracking retro art, and an addictive soundtrack. Chris, what's going on in Unichrome?
Okay, Unichrome. So I actually, they were like, it's a 1-bit adventure. And I've seen stuff like that before where it's like basically kind of looks like an Atari game, but like works a little bit better. And so I was kind of expecting that out of this one, but no, this is just, it's a sprite-based, like pixel-based game, but it's completely modern. So I think the 1-bit might be referring to, like, you know, how it'd be like 2 bits used to be 25 cents. So a bit would be 12 and a half cents somehow. Maybe that's what they mean. But I don't know, because it's also $15. So it's not a cheap game or anything like that. I don't know what they mean by 1-bit unicorn. And that's kind of like the vibe of the game, is there's a lot of stuff going on that you don't quite know what's up. But Unichrome is a platform shooter, kind of it's a little bit of a run and gun. I guess you could call it maybe like a Mega Man-ish kind of game, where you play as a unicorn who has been woken up from cryogenic slumber after 1,000 years or something like that. To fight a black unicorn, which is an evil unicorn who has also been, you know, revived and has used her animal compatriots to steal all the colors of the world. And so you have to fight them and win back those colors one by one. That's the story. And they're sticking to it. But, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, 1,000 years of cryogenic sleep or whatever, but like your unicorn wakes up already knowing what like kitten memes are and things like that. It's like, you know, it's very much like all about modern referential jokes and things like that. Fully voice acted, which is interesting. So it's got voice acting in it. It's got like a modern soundtrack. It's pretty much a modern game. As you run and gun through, basically the world has been, like I said, all the color has been stolen from it. And what is left is this kind of black and white, really animated, really glitchy looking like world. Like if you shoot the walls, they like might temporarily, because you have a rainbow gun, they'll temporarily like light up with some color. It's just for like effect, I think. And like sometimes they'll glitch out into like other kinds of like garbage graphics, which is pretty great. I mean, it's all very intentional, but like the game kind of has this haphazard approach that I kind of like. It's graphically, it's kind of chaos. But yeah, basically you run through and you shoot the bad guys, which could be like little televisions with like the color, you know, the thing that they used to do in with TVs when at the end of the broadcast day where it would just show the color spectrum. And, you know, it'd be something like that or like, you know, some weird bats and things like that. And you start off with a regular handgun with infinite ammo. And as you unlock more levels, which I believe there's 7 worlds and 8 levels in each world. Leading up to like the big boss, and there's like mini bosses throughout as well. So a good amount of levels in here. You unlock other weapons, which, you know, like a shotgun, machine gun, like rocket launcher, you know, the usual stuff, and use them to take down like your bosses and everything. But your pistol always has infinite ammo, so you don't have to pick up anything there. You also get bombs of varying sizes that are also limited. The other thing about this game is that there are a lot of extras. And this is a really interesting one because there's 2 ways to unlock the extra content in the game. so the extra content is that there's 4 more play modes that are, you know, that are pretty interesting. And the way that you unlock them, the first way you unlock them is that in the levels, you'll find a colored horseshoe, a rainbow horseshoe. And if you collect enough of them, you can use them, you know, there's like maybe 1 in each level, and of course the levels track which ones you found them in and not, you know, because the levels also track how many coins you get. It does that thing where it like tracks everything that you get in the stages, and you can replay them to try and get a perfect score. And yeah, if you collect enough of these horseshoes, you can unlock your 4 different play modes. Or if you just go into the option menu, you can, or not the option menu, but like into the extras menu, I guess, you could simply just choose to just unlock it all already. It's like, yeah, if you want to actually just play this stuff without actually collecting anything, here's the option to do that.
Hey, that so works. Like,
collect some stuff to play the extra stuff, or don't. We don't care. They're like, you know, you can't undo it without, like, resetting your entire, like, save. That's the caveat there, so if you did unlock it and you're like, oh, I've made a dreadful mistake, I must go back and undo it, then yeah, you gotta start like everything over apparently. But yeah, I've never seen that happen before. I've seen like the extra options happen with like, you know, like modern Final Fantasies, like the, you know, start your character off at level 99, but you can't undo it. But yeah, just like to unlock different things in the game that are supposed to be unlocked through gameplay. Anyway. So we might as well talk about those extra modes as well.
Might as well.
Yeah, rogue mode, which is a roguelike. You get a certain amount of hearts, and basically it's permadeath. They're procedurally generated levels, and you can, you know, you play through them, and then I think you fight a boss at the end and stuff. It's very hard, so I didn't get very far in it. There's also, of course, there's also a boss rush, or where you can replay the boss fights at 3 different levels of difficulty. With, you know, weapons to match, so that kind of gives you a good chance to try out some of the weapons, because even if you unlock all the weapons, they aren't going to just be in your inventory, you know, you have to actually pick them up. There's time trial mode, which is basically speedrunner mode, and the Colosseum, I was going to call it the Colosseum, because sometimes I say stuff like that, which also has, like, its own 3 modes that are basically... Looks seems like it's kind of a wave fighting kind of thing, so that's kind of cool. But yeah, like I said, those are the things that you can unlock one of the 2 ways, or you can play through the story mode, which, like I said, is just involves a wisecracking unicorn who makes lots of, you know, kind of ooh-woo, OMG kind of references, you know, OMG, WTF, BBQ kind of humor, going against a possibly evil unicorn that just wants to steal color. I don't know, but the story is secondary. The gameplay is really good. It's nice and tight. I like it. It's got lots of screen shake that you can turn off, lots of flashing lights that you can turn off, and lots of, you know, colorfulness. And, you know, they really do well with the presentation here. And like I said, the game itself, just the core game, is like a kind of medium difficulty thing. So it's not like it's going to make you, you know, throw your controller or anything, but it does absolutely have the capacity to ramp up quite a lot, so I think people will find a lot to enjoy with this one.
Cool, sounds good. It is $15. What is your official verdict?
I think it is, you know, not going to win a Game of the Year award, but I think that it is solid enough to warrant a buy it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I'm going to have to give this one a go. I'm not a huge, huge fan of the, quote, one-bit art style, but if the game is fun, it's fun.
Yeah, it's I don't know what the one-bit thing refers to, because, like I said, it's got plenty of, like, big, bright, you know, detailed sprites. Like, the unicorn itself is kind of Atari-ish, but at least it's got, like, you know, it's got a colorful mane and stuff like that.
I think it just refers to the overall Atari-ish vibe of the game and, like, the low...
Yeah, but that really isn't here except on just the character sprite of your unicorn character. Yeah, which, who, again, is fully voiced, voice acted, so that's like... And I'm going to check one thing right quick, because I don't know if I can see this quickly, but I want to see what the size of the software is, like the actual amount of... maybe I can't find that. That's okay. Yeah, I say it's a buy it, but, you know, I would say, yeah, give it a try. Don't be alarmed by the one-bitness of it, because it doesn't have that cheap look to it, you know?
No.
Clearly some care went into this.
Allegedly, it is 326 meg.
That's not bad.
That's what the store page says.
Less than I thought it was. That's less than I thought it would be.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Next game is One Shot World Machine Edition, developed by Future Cat, published by Dangan Entertainment. Released September 22nd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Experience an adventure game with puzzles that go beyond its own window and establish a unique bond with the main character. Pernell, what is going on in One Shot World Machine Edition?
My other big surprise of the week, that's what's going on. So the first time I attempted to try to play this game, I fell asleep. Not most likely because I was half asleep, already tired, and it's a kind of not quite a point-and-click adventure game, but it kind of is. So it really was not the right time for me. Next time I tried to play it, though, I had a little more energy in me, and I was immediately hooked on what it is, because it's got a really cool premise, and there's a ton of heart here. It's one of those games you can't say a great deal about it, but what I can describe it as is the premise is your character... is you. You're a god in this world that exists within a computer. And in this computer world, you are helping a person who also just somehow found their way there. Like, they don't know why they're there. And their job or role within this world is to return the sun. Get the sun back on. And you pretty much are able to communicate with this person. Like, quote-unquote telepathically, but really, this whole game's world exists on a computer. And you can, and the game itself is running in a window that you can close, a window that you can slide to the side and open up the documents folder and see what documents are inside, or review the help me file, or it's literally a computer world within a computer, which is actually that much funnier when the person inside the computer game opens up a computer and boots it up. But I digress. The gameplay itself is pretty simple, really. You walk around, you talk to people, and you solve environmental puzzles, some usually by finding some form of item, other times by combining that item with another item to make a new item, and then using that item to do a function. But for the most part, you are doing that over and over again while interacting with new people and just seeing how these characters live. But also, sometimes you have to do things that go beyond the scope of this main character's world, which is also cool. I think this game has a ridiculous amount of charm to it. I like seeing the world unfold and learning about the people that live here, and also talking to my little main character about what she's worried about, what she's thinking about, and just her predicament. It's a game that, funny enough, one of my listeners on my other show finished playing through last week for the Summer Games Challenge. And she was like, yeah, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. I was like, hey, I'm reviewing that game. She's like, you're going to love it. And I didn't know what to think of it. I think she was right. It's really, really good. I shouldn't be surprised, I guess, because Dangan Entertainment published it, and those guys seem to strike gold. They have not failed me yet somehow. I don't know how that works, but they're fantastic. And this game is no exception to that rule. If you're a fan of point-and-click adventure games, if you're a fan of games that... I've said this a lot on the show, it's up there with Unique, but games that exude a lot of heart and charm in their execution and presentation, I feel as though RayShot World Edition or World Machine Edition is up your alley. It is a gem of a game. And even though I'm not sure I'd put the music on like my 2022 wrap-up list, I will not be surprised if the game itself winds up on my like best of 2022 list. Wow. I really like it. Yeah, it's just, again, like, I like when games attempt to do something that feels somewhat different and they do it well. And this game is one such title. Like, this has been a weird episode for like excellent titles for me. Excellent titles that didn't seem like they would hit the mark, but they were. Like, I was hyped for Jack Move. And while Jack Move itself is a decent game, these two are the ones that made me go, yeah, this is why I review games. These are good titles.
Nice. Well, it's $15. What's your official verdict?
It's definitely a buy. It's a good game.
Cool. All right, well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Electrician Simulator, developed by Take It Studio, published by Gaming Factory and Ultimate Games, released September 21st on Steam for $17.99. Play the role of an electrician and learn the basics of electricity, just like in real life. Fix broken stuff, assemble sockets, repair gamepads, remote control, speakers, plugs, chandeliers, change light bulbs, and lay wires. Be sure to check everything twice. There is no room for mistakes. Chris, how many mistakes did you make?
I actually did good because I do what I'm told.
Nice.
But yeah, I did check out what happens when you do screw up stuff, and it is pretty funny. So I love that today is my birthday and I took the entire week off of work. So I'm in the middle, smack in the middle of vacation at the moment. And you got me two games that are literally doing jobs. So thank you for that. Electrician Simulator is a game where you play as a fledgling, electrician. You're 18 years old and you're taking over your father's business, but you might actually be the rightful heir to the throne. Oh, wait a minute. I'll start over again. So yeah, you're a guy in a garage and you have a truck. And so this actually, I was very surprised that this wasn't made by like any of the same people that made Toy Tinkerer Simulator, because like it's so close. It's possible that simulator games are just kind of samey. It's one of those things. You walk around in the first person. You can interact with different things. The first thing that the game has you do is remove boxes from your truck by clicking on them, and that just literally just removes them, which is very nice. I wish that my actual move last week was that smooth. And then in the back of the truck, just flopping around without any kind of box whatsoever, is your VR headset.
So, oh, jeez.
Clearly, we're not dealing with a genius here. But that VR headset you can actually use to go through tutorial missions, which let you go into a virtual house and then basically do a test. So your first thing is learning how to rewire a switch, a light switch. And then your second thing is learning how to repair sockets. So you just you basically do these and they unlock different jobs that you can now do for people. Those jobs are, of course, located in a laptop that is right there in the middle of your workshop, as is true for every simulator I've played so far. And the laptop allows you to receive emails, which are one of two different kinds of jobs from people. It also lets you communicate with the electrician school, who, again, operates completely virtually, just like real life. And it also has your basically online store where you can order stuff and then just obtain it instantly, which is also kind of we're inching towards that, honestly, nowadays, what with Amazon and stuff. But anyways, so the two different kinds of jobs that you can get.
It's scary how quick delivery turnaround is getting.
Exactly. I'll sometimes see, if I'm ordering something on a weekday, I'm like, this better have same day delivery. But anyways, so yeah, I don't actually care, but it is nice. It is nice.
Oh, when something is you can get free delivery on Monday or free delivery or no hassle delivery on Thursday, I'm like, oh, I'm taking Monday. Absolutely, yeah. Taking Monday.
don't put
they're both free.
Don't put the hassle on
why is there an option here? Why? Ooh, yeah. I can earn a dollar on digital music. Fuck you. I want it on Monday.
Yeah, no. I'm the same way. It's like, don't pass off your hassle to me, Bezos. You're the one who's hassling people.
Yeah. And anyways. And that's the story of how Ashley and I bought 300 ping pong balls to put in our cat's ball pit.
Nice. I like it. Crazy. That sounds like a good idea.
We're crazy.
I mean, I got three cats now, so like things like that are starting to like be tempting to me. Like, you know, things that they can do together instead of standing on the opposite sides of the hallway and hiss at each other.
Anyways, I mean, we were at Walmart and they had like an ice cream truck ball pit, and it came with like 10 balls. Like, ooh, how is that a ball pit? So then we bought like a pack of 50 of them and we poured them in there, and I'm like, wow, 50 really isn't that many. So we ordered 300.
Wow.
Now our cats have a lot of ping pong balls to play with.
That's awesome.
We have problems. Anyway, electrician simulator.
Electrician simulator. So there are two kinds of jobs that you can do. One is jobs where they send you a broken thing and you fix it from your workbench. The other is where you actually go on the job and fix something in people's homes. I don't know if the game can just like go infinitely. There seems to be about 30 such jobs for you to do, but they are pretty involved. And like I said, they do increase in complexity for sure. So when somebody sends something to you, then you get it. You basically get the object on your workbench and you can start a disassembly process, which of course you use your tools on hand to do that. You might have to purchase a tool specifically for the job, but it's very convenient that it's just like it'll show you all the tools that you could possibly use, and you can just click on one and it has a little dollar amount next to it, and it's like, you know, you need this de-ruster, it costs like $20 for a can and it's 100 uses, and you're like, yeah, sure, click, and you got it now. And you know, because it's in your shop and stuff, so you know, because you might need to de-rust a screw before you unscrew it, for instance. And the game will tell you if, you know, if you try to use your screwdriver on this screw and they're like, you should de-rust that first. You're like, okay, well, I'll de-rust that first. So you de-rust it, you take off like the plates, you take out the circuits, unplug them first, of course. You, you know, you can take out everything. And then you have all the different pieces on a list. And then the game will be able to tell you, it'll tell you like whether they're already in good condition or unknown condition. So if it's an unknown condition, then you click on it, you look at it, analyze it, and then you can tell whether it's broken or not. And so if you analyze it and it's broken, then you have the option of replacing it, which of course has a dollar amount. You then, you know, replace it. Once everything is in good condition, quote unquote, you can put it all back together and ship it back off to your customer and get your money. You also get experience points, which allows you to purchase better tools and, of course, take on bigger jobs. Very, very easy to figure out everything, like as opposed to Crossroads Inn. Like, you don't really need a lengthy tutorial for all this. It's actually pretty intuitive.
It looks like it's pretty realistic and in-depth too. Do you think this could be used as like a training tool?
That's the thing, is that I haven't done a lot of electric work myself, but I've watched a lot of it because I like to like watch people do technical things that I don't understand. And also there is a comment on the Steam page from a professional electrician who says this is actually really accurate. However, they do give you a big old splash warning at the beginning of the game. They say, do not attempt any of these. This is a video game. This does not substitute actual training in electric stuff. But it does give you a good understanding of like how this stuff looks when you take it apart without actually having to take it apart. You know, the principle things are there, and the main principal thing is turn off the breaker before you work with wires, because I was just about to get to going out to people's house. So what you do is you first gather up your tools, and then you go and you know, like, you order whatever you need, whatever parts and materials you need for this job, and then you click on your truck to go to and your truck's like a 1950s like beater, like a beat up pickup truck. It's crazy. I also like that your character walks around with an audible, like kind of a shuffly clank. Like, it, he sounds like an electrician. I cannot tell you why, but somehow the sound effects in this is perfect as far as like walking around goes. It sounds like an electrician guy walking around. You just hear like this clank of tools and like a shuffle of like jeans or something. I don't know. Anyways, you get to the house and you got to locate like the fuse so that you can turn off the power if you need to like operate stuff with wires and stuff. Because if not, the game will let you take apart a switch panel or a or, you know, a light fixture or something like that. And it will let you get all the way to where you can touch a live wire and then get shocked. So, and of course, once you do that, then that's kind of like a, the game's like, you know, well, you got shocked, you know, like it does, it's not like a, you don't then spend like, you know, a month in the hospital or you know, like rehabilitate. You don't get a, like a skin graft on
rehab
your hand
simulator.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, skin grafts and like, you know, trying to regain feelings. It just like goes brzap, and it's like it's kind of scary, so you're like, oh jeez, I forgot to. And like I said, I didn't do it, but I did like I did check it out to see what happens, you know. But every time I was actually on the job, I was like, and the game is actually sometimes pretty good about, you know, because they give you a checklist of things to do, and sometimes they'll be like, don't forget the, or are you forgetting the fuse box or whatever. And, yeah, so that second part, like I said, you go and locate the thing that has the problem, and you go through the process of dismantling, like, wall fixtures, switch things, sockets, and, you know, whatever else, or taking apart things, and basically kind of testing, running through stuff, and, you know, there's a lot of back and forth, you know, going and turning back on the fuse box so that you can flick a switch and see if everything worked. But, I mean, like, certain things are very obvious, like if you pull a bulb out of a light fixture and it says bulb is broken, you're like, well, I can tell the bulb is broken, so I better replace that, you know, things like that. The houses actually look really cool. There's certain things, of course, to keep it from being too fancy, such as like mirrors being kind of warbled out so you can't see a reflection and things like that. But apart from that, it really kind of had a cool feel to it, like being somewhere else and like fixing things. And you know, the game is ultimately very relaxing. There's not a huge time limit on, I don't think there's any time limit on anything. And you know, like I said, if you're kind of stuck, then you know, just check what you're looking at and, you know, close in on it. You can rotate it around really well with the mouse and stuff by dragging it with the mouse right buttonhole held in and stuff. You know, look for screws that you might not have screwed in. You know, and just like click around, find something that, you know, the game will highlight so that you know what to do next. And so there's a little bit of tinkering involved in it as well. But like I said, it's ultimately kind of teaching you, you know, because like once you fix one light fixture, for instance, then every time you see a light fixture, you know what's behind it. And I think that's really cool. Like the game ultimately, like, yeah, it did feel really relaxing to me. So I was like, dang, this. It's nice to be able to work with, like, actually no risk and no, like, time limit and anything like that. But it's nice to, like, pick stuff apart, fix it, and put it back together. Like, that's really cool.
That's just something I love about Power Washing Sim is that there's no time limits. There's no limit to how much water you... Like, they have challenge mode in the game that adds a time limit or a water limit. But for the main game, it's just go at your own pace. And I wish more games would do that and not be as, like, oh, here's the countdown timer. You got to make sure you finish before that winds up, or you're only going to get 2 stars instead of 3.
Right. Yeah. The game does like, give you more experience points if you do stuff under a certain time limit, but I mean, you know, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, it's $18. What do you think?
I think this one's really good. I love the simulator games I've played so far that have been like this. This one I especially like because I do like that it does break down things like circuitry and, like, you know, how stuff is put together in a way that, at least according to one Steam comment, is pretty darn accurate. And at least from what I could tell, like, you know, because I mean, I have seen, you know, the assembly for like certain parts that I've seen in this game, and like, yeah, it did look good to me. So yeah, $18. I mean, if this sort of thing appeals to you, certainly go for it. You know, it does have like some extra challenges that you can do. So it's not just, you know, passing through a bunch of levels and then you win. Which, by the way, I actually forgot to mention that that the end game as well has like a sandbox mode, which is really cool. So that you can also play that game without having to do the whole storyline mission. So yeah, anyway. Yeah, it's a buy it.
Cool. Alrighty, well, we made it through. We are done. You're finished with this episode. Big thanks to y'all for being here. Chris, thanks for being here on your birthday.
Thank you.
We could have like done this a day earlier if you wanted. I didn't know. I feel bad now.
No. I'm having like my actual birthday party on October 8th, which is a Saturday, so that people are actually coming over. And so, you know, I'm not worried about it. Today is like I literally just did errands today and then came back and I did buy myself a present and I did have a slice of Boston cream pie, which is actually a cake, which is stupid.
Well, it looks delicious, but yeah, that is it for this episode. Music, we're going to play a track off of Shovel Knight Dig because the soundtrack is available and it's really good. So
I can dig that.
Ha!
Boom.